We celebrate food and eating once a month in a special segment we call Savor. Our regular partner and segment producer is Will Smith, an Ashland-based food stylist with a deep knowledge of food and its preparation. Will is back in the studio with me for the first time in a very long time. Will, good to see you.
I can't believe I'm here.
It's just, I saw the face through the glass as you waved. Like, wow, he's here today. This
exactly.
is excellent.
It's exciting.
So Will keeps the focus on the seasons of food, on what is fresh and ready to eat now. October's harvest month, or the final one anyway, with so much to talk about, we turn our attention to wine. Andy Meyer runs Goldback Wines and shares the Catalyst Wine Collective, a joint wine tasting room in Phoenix. He joins us by phone. Andy, welcome to The Exchange.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
Good to have you here. So get to your story in a second. I want to first hear from Will about the origin story, about how you first met Andy and latched onto this.
Well, I was working in the tasting room at Weisinger's, and I'm always intrigued by eager people who are anxious to share their knowledge of wine, and Andy really helped me out and learning a little bit more about wine, and then sort of followed him. You know, the last couple of years has been so disjointed, and knowing and hearing through gossip circles that he was going to open this Catalyst wine tasting in Phoenix, and they opened in April, and so I was there pretty early to visit.
So it's Andy and two other wineries, right? In
yes.
Catalyst Wine Collective?
Huh? Yes. And the thing that I think is so sort of fun about it is, you know, I think wine sort of suffers from a little bit of a snob aspect to it.
And you think?
And I think when you visit wineries, especially in Southern Oregon, because they haven't been taken over by conglomerates like they have in California, they're all independent people. They sort of fall into two separate categories. They're sort of like you're going to visit your old grandma at their house, or you're like feeling that you're at some like five-star resort. And so it's just really fun to be in this really modern environment with straight talking wine people who can really give you a great experience, not only with Andy's wines, but with the other two winemakers as well.
So Andy, it sounds like you're giving to Will what a lot of other people gave to you. Your interest in wine apparently started in college. Tell us about that process.
Yeah, so I actually moved to Oregon in 2006 to finish up college, and I was looking for a summer job and answered a Craigslist ad to go work in a tasting room on weekends. And within about 20 minutes of driving up the driveway to that interview, I kind of had a lightning bolt moment that I was going to work in wine kind of for the rest of my career. You know, I was an environmental science major, so I was studying a lot of chemistry and biology and ecology and geology. And this, you know, wine was something that really wove all those pieces together. And, you know, wine's something that's also kind of irreducibly complex. You can farm the same plot of land your entire life, and, you know, you'll have maybe 40 or 50 chances to make wine out of it if you're lucky, and you'll never figure it all out. And that's just, you know, on a micro scale, and then you zoom out, and there's a huge diversity of regions and climates and varieties, and I knew I'd never get bored.
So the kind of place where you knew that so many of your skills and so many parts of your brain could get turned on from the sounds of it.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's also a really kind of creative component to it too, and honestly a community component to it. You know, wine is something that's been around for a millennium because it brings people together, and usually brings people together over food. So that part of it was really appealing as well.
You did so many different jobs apparently when you first got into the wine business. Was there one that felt most comfortable to you?
You know, definitely on the production side, on the winemaking side. You know, I've worked for a number of wineries in different regions, New Zealand, Australia, Washington, California. You know, I've worked as a wine director in a restaurant, which is always really fun to be kind of sharing wine with people in that environment and turning them on to new things. But really a lot of it is the things that kind of originally drew me to wine. You know, being able to kind of utilize that kind of scientific skill set and problem solving and dealing with the challenges that you face, you know, every vintage, because every vintage is always going to be different. You know, that's the piece that I think I've really kind of settled on. But it's nice to have, you know, the opportunity at Catalyst to still be able to get out there and kind of, you know, meet the public and meet other people in the trade and really kind of switch them on to new things.
Okay, so that is part of the reason for having Catalyst, is just to have public contact instead of just with the grapes.
Yeah, exactly right.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't just come to Oregon to stay, apparently. Talk about how far and wide you traveled to gain some experience.
Yeah, so when I finished up with school, I kind of moved from the tasting room kind of working into production. And, you know, for winemaking, you know, really about, I'd say somewhere between 80 to 90% of winemaking happens in that 2 or 3 month period around harvest. You know, it's when you're making all your pick decisions, it's your fermentation management. You know, there's a lot of wine is kind of made in those couple of months. So there's also a lot to learn in those couple of months. And at the time, you know, I just finished up with school, going back to school to get a master's degree in enology did not sound as exciting as staying in production. And when I was working in the Willamette, there's a really great kind of network of winemakers that, you know, will switch hemispheres. You know, so they'll work a harvest in Oregon in the fall, and then the spring when things are kind of quiet, they'll head down to New Zealand and work harvest down there. And, you know, wanting to learn as much as I could from different producers with different styles to work with different grape varieties, you know, I really wanted to kind of gain that experience. Plus, it was a great excuse to travel around. So I started in Oregon in 2008 and then went to New Zealand, back up to Oregon, then over to Australia in 2009, up to Washington 2010, and then down to work on the Sonoma Coast in 2011, where I kind of hung out until about 2015.
Wow. So what made you come to the Rogue Valley, though? Because you hadn't had previous Rogue Valley connections, had you?
No, not really. I'd had a couple of the wines that had made their way up north when I was in Oregon, and was always kind of intrigued about the region. But, you know, one of the things that I kind of discovered when I was working as a wine director in Sonoma County was, you know, and with the experience that I had going from, you know, lots of different wine regions, you know, I kind of in my mind broke wine regions up into operating in sort of three stages, right? There's the first stage is kind of the pioneering stage, right? So it's when people go to a new region and they put grapevines in the ground and they kind of prove that it's a good region for growing grapes. You know, so think like the Willamette Valley in the 60s and 70s, you know, this area, I mean, I guess originally back in the 1860s, but really kind of in the 70s and 80s, you know, with Weisinger's and Troon and a few of the other producers kind of coming in. And then, you know, after that pioneering stage, there's kind of a second stage, which I sort of think of as more of an entrepreneurial stage. And that's when, you know, the region starts to get a little bit of attention and draws in, you know, producers from other areas to kind of raise the quality and the consistency of the wines coming out of that area. And then eventually, at some point, there's a third stage that kind of happens, which I think Will alluded to earlier, where it's kind of the big money stage. And that's where, you know, you have major wine companies, you know, coming in and purchasing up lots of property and putting in, you know, large multi-million dollar tasting rooms. And it becomes very difficult for a small startup producer to compete with those big wineries. And I was really witnessing that in Sonoma County. And so I was looking for a region that was kind of more in that second stage, that kind of entrepreneurial stage, and looked around in California and came up to Oregon and visited, and, you know, something just kind of clicked. So this area, I think, is really in that second stage, and it's a really exciting area to be working in.
This is Savor, our food segment on the Jefferson Exchange. Andy Meyer is the winemaker at Goldback Wines, and he's also part of Catalyst Wine Collective, a tasting room shared with two other small wineries in Phoenix. Will Smith, of course, our segment producer and food stylist here in the studio with me for the first time in eons, it seems. And you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The way Andy was rattling off the names, Will, of other wineries, reminded me that as you have gotten further into wines in the Rogue Valley, you've discovered too that it sounds like it's a really close-knit kind of community.
It is, and I think that's sort of the beauty of the Catalyst idea, which is how do we get small businesses off their feet? And I think it's so wise to shed a little bit of your ego and to be able to get into business with people that are in your same situation. You can actually be a force in the business, which I love.
So Andy, tell us how you we got the story about why you came here, but tell us the tale of the name Goldback Wines and then the joint venture with the other two wineries that form Catalyst Wine Collective.
Sure. In retrospect, it's a funny story, but at the time, it was a very stressful moment. It was kind of 2018. I started making wine in 2016, so I was kind of getting ready to release my first vintages of wine. And I had a name picked out that I wanted to use, and I, you know, hadn't given it much thought because I thought I had that problem solved. And a few months before I was getting ready to bottle and get my labels organized, I found out that there were some trademark issues with that particular name. This is, you know, again, 3 months before I'm bottling. My wife at the time was also about 5 months pregnant, so there was a lot happening in that moment. And, you know, so I kind of reached out to family and friends, and I said, listen, if anybody can help me come up with another name for the brand, I will send you a case a year for the lifetime of the brand. And I got hundreds of responses from friends and family. And it turns out about 90, 95% of those were also already trademarked. So this is a couple months before bottling again, and I was out on a hike with a friend of mine who's a biologist, kind of hiking above Lithia Park in Ashland, and you know, we were kind of talking about various different things, and he stopped and he pointed out this fern that was growing on the side of the trail. He said, "Have you ever seen one of these before?" And I said, "No, just, you know, there's lots of ferns here in the Rogue Valley." And I said, "No, check this out." And he pulled off the frond and slapped it against his clothing, and it left a perfect gold imprint. He said, "This is a goldback fern." Going, goldback fern, goldback. Okay, all right. It's something that grows locally in the area. So there's a tie to the Rogue Valley. It's something that's kind of right in front of you all along. You just kind of have to know where to look. And that became the name of the brand. So he now gets a case of wine a year for the lifetime of the brand.
So then after goldback became a thing, then how did you end up hooking up with the folks from the Ryan Rose label and the Sound and Vision label?
Yeah, so I mean, as Will kind of mentioned before, this is a pretty small, tight-knit wine community, and I'd met first Rob Folan kind of when I moved to the area, who's the winemaker for Ryan Rose, and you know, we'd kind of talked loosely about collaborating on some different wines. We're both kind of really switched on to you know, making different varietals and experimenting with different types of winemaking and wine. You know, and Rob's been in the business now for 20 years making wine and still kind of had that really kind of creative drive. And then I met with Joe Chapolis from Sound and Vision probably a year or two after that. And we kind of had that same kind of conversation. And so, you know, in August of 2020, Joe and his wife Carmen, who's also kind of a big part of the Sound and Vision brand, hosted a series of tastings at their home that were all outside on the deck and featured, you know, a few other small wineries that were kind of winemaker-driven wineries. And, you know, those events were a really big success. And after, you know, that series kind of concluded, they said, you know, maybe this is something we should look at putting in a brick-and-mortar space. And, you know, we kind of found a spot in Phoenix that we were really excited about, in these kind of industrial studios that had just opened up over there. And, you know, decided to kind of give it a go. Brought Rob on board, and the three of us, you know, did all the build-out for the tasting room ourselves. And opened up in April.
Now, Will, we had the earlier segment featuring Clyde's Corner, the pizza joint in Phoenix. Is this that same?
It is a destination. Mm-hmm. You can enjoy an afternoon of wine tasting and then go have a great pizza. It's a great spot.
See the little mix and match with food.
Oh my God,
wines
the best!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let me ask about that trend generally, though. I mean, are you? There's a level of informality that I see coming into dining now. That you know, where you.
I think also catalysts too. Mm-hmm. I think that's the part that I find really fantastic in that it's going to just open the eyes of someone who may not want to go to a more formal situation. This is a very casual, no nonsense, modern way of learning a lot about wine, and then you can get a pizza. I mean, it's sort of a perfect day for me.
This is Savor, our food segment on the Jefferson Exchange. Will Smith is the segment producer, a food stylist based in the Rogue Valley. We're also talking to Andy Meyer at Goldback Wines and Catalyst Wine Collective. And you're welcome to join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Mark in Merlin is back with a question about a particular kind of varietal. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. It's wonderful to hear you guys talking about this stuff. Back in the middle 80s, I worked as the sommelier for the Simsbury 1820 house in Connecticut.
Simsbury, Connecticut?
Years later, one of the things that I've discovered, I like going out and finding new varietals and tasting them. And my experience, there's a new one that's become quite popular here. It's called Tempranillo. I think that's how you pronounce
Tempranillo,
it.
Yeah, Tempranillo, right.
And so I find it leaves me with a peppery aftertaste, and I'm not particularly fond of it. I'm thinking it might do better as a blend, and I was wondering about your guest's opinion on that.
All right, thanks for that, Mark. I forgot, Mark, did you say Simsbury, Connecticut?
Yeah, 1820 House in Simsbury, Connecticut. That's where I was the wine steward.
Oh, wow, my sister lives there. I just talked to her last night. It's great. I went to high school in Connecticut. Let's talk about Tempranillo, and let's start with the winemaker, Andy. First of all, what varietals do you deal in?
Well, for Goldbeck, I work with Grenache, Syrah, Chenin Blanc, and this year I'm actually making a little bit of Pinot Noir as well. But as my day job, I'm also the associate winemaker for Weisinger's, and we make quite a bit of Tempranillo here. So it is definitely a variety that I have some experience with. To the caller's kind of question, I mean, I think that you can kind of approach it both ways. You know, I think that, you know, the rules around winemaking are kind of increasingly loose. I mean, at the end of the day, you're trying to make something that, you know, tastes really good and pairs well with food. So I think, you know, you'll see fantastic examples of Tempranillo that are kind of on their own standalone wines. And you'll also see Tempranillo be part of blends. I mean, for instance, at Weisinger's, we have a blend called Mescalare, which is a blend of Grenache, Syrah, and Tempranillo that tends to kind of work really well. So I think there's a lot of different ways you can express that variety. And yeah, I mean, if you want to have it as a standalone, I think it's really well suited to the Rogue Valley. But, you know, blending it is not sacrilege. You know, it's about making something that tastes good.
Will, what are your thoughts on Tempranillo?
No, and it's we always have to think of wine being an expression of a winemaker. Each year, it's going to be a different animal. So if you may have had maybe a wine that you didn't like, don't scratch it off. Try it the next year. I mean, it's always changing. I personally love Tempranillo, and Eric's at Weisinger's is one of the best. It's delicious.
Let's talk about the recipe, because Andy mentioned the Chenin Blanc.
Yeah.
And that's what you chose to put together.
It's a really nice wine. It has a bit of perfume to it. Has some apple and melon, and it has, you know, Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, is it like 60% stainless steel and 60% or 50% neutral oak? So
I think that's 110%, which
right.
is what I put
right.
into every
exactly.
wine, but yeah, it's about...
I always 40. Overdo it.
Yeah.
It's a 60-50 cut,
yeah. So it's kind of a blend of both.
Yeah. Right. Well, and the thing that is nice about using that wine is, I think if you use something that was like super oaky, it wouldn't work so well. So there's a fair amount of acid to it, and it has all those like fruit notes to it. So for shellfish especially, and you could easily use this recipe for clams or mussels.
Crossing out other mollusks. That was my
question. I did mussels too. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I do like to do is, you know, after you've cooked the shellfish and removed it from the broth, I really like to reduce that wine down. It sort of burns off a little bit of the alcohol, and you end up with that fruit flavor with the butter, which is really nice.
So basically half a cup salted butter, 8 garlic cloves. Yeah, is that enough?
Yes, please.
1 chili bird serrano or jalapeno, 2 cups of Goldbeck Chenin Blanc, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of parsley, more for garnish, half a teaspoon of chili flake. And what do you do with all those?
So all of that is going to add that little bit of spice to it, because it's sort of a neutral flavor. And then you always want to have some bread to soak that up.
I was wondering about the bread, yeah. Because so you don't need it like a sandwich. You just want to.
That's
just
a dab, you soak up that broth. That's half. That's half the meal, I think.
That is fun. And you said any other mollusk will work too, clams or oysters or something.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So, Andy, I want to come back to the idea of you having a day job with Weisinger. I mean, I can't believe that you're unique. I mean, is that fairly common for people to be running their own wineries on the side while they're working for somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's incredibly common, but it certainly is a thread that ties together, you know, Rob, Joe, and I. Rob is also kind of the head winemaker at Belfiore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of his day job, and then Ryan Rose is kind of his own project. And Joe works over with, you know, Herb Quaddy and Brian Greer at Barrel 42 and Quaddy North, and kind of has his own sort of brand there. And there's a couple of other sort of small producers that, that are sort of doing the same thing. So I think it's something that's kind of increasingly common in the area, or certainly starting up. I mean, you know, wine is a very wine and winemaking is a very capital intensive business, and a lot of the equipment that you need you're only using for a few months out of the year. And so I think it's, you know, you're able for a lot of established wineries, you're able to kind of bring in, you know, functionally another winemaker, and you know, this is an area that still kind of, I think, favors community over competition. Really, you know, it's not a competitive thing. It's sort of a rising tide, you know, floats all boats. So it allows for different expressions of varieties, and it allows for kind of more people to be really elevating what the Rogue Valley's doing.
All right. To go back to your analysis of pioneer, entrepreneurial, and big money stage, you see the Rogue Valley is still in the entrepreneurial stage.
I really do, yeah. And I think there's a lot of really, you know, exciting things that are happening here. You know, you're seeing new producers kind of pop up. You're seeing new varieties start to arrive in the area. I mean, we already have, I think at last count, over 80 varieties grown in the Rogue Valley of grapes. And so I think there's still a lot of kind of creative energy and community energy. It's not... you know, you're not trying to kind of get ahead by putting somebody else down. You know, there's that real kind of collaborative spirit that I think still really exists here.
Okay. Will, last minute is yours.
Oh, it's so great. And also, I want to talk about the markets. You know, I hope everybody got to the market in October because it is just spectacular out there. All those hard skin squashes, the end of hothouse tomatoes. You can almost get every single thing you could possibly want at the markets this month. And then the end of October, the Saturday market in Ashland closes. And then the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, the Tuesday market closes in Ashland. So try and get out there and support your farmers.
Enjoy the bounty. There's a lot out there.
There's a lot.
It's so good to have Will Smith, our segment producer and food stylist, back in the studio after 18 months. And good to meet you, Andy Meyer, at Goldback Wines and the Catalyst Wine Collective. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, take care.